This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The taxpayer bailout of First Energy, a piece of legislation at the center of serious federal charges against Ohio House Speaker Larry Householder, went into effect last fall. House Bill 6 provided subsidies for the company, which provides power to large swaths of the state, but there was criticism before it passed, and now calls are mounting for its repeal following Householder's arrest. Our first guest today called it an environmental nightmare when it was adopted. He is Democratic State Representative David Leland of Columbus. David, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure to have you. I'd like you to take us back to last week, Tuesday, I believe, early morning hours, when news started to break that FBI agents were raiding the Perry County farm of Speaker Householder. What was going through your mind and your fellow lawmakers' minds?
Well, you know, I had started out the morning pretty quietly and went out for a bike ride. And when I got back, my phone was going off the hook. I mean, it was just crazy. People were saying, what was going on? Nobody in our party knew anything about any of this and didn't know that this was coming or didn't anticipate any of this from happening. So it was quite a shock that this happened. And, you know, this is the second time that we've seen this happen in the last 2 years, because in 2018, the other Republican speaker, Cliff Rosenberger, also had to resign because of corruption. So to have two speakers in basically 2 years, both Republican, both have to leave under a cloud of corruption is pretty disconcerting.
Well, we should note, of course, that currently Speaker Householder only faces charges and allegations, not been convicted. And I mean, as of this moment, he's still speaker, is he not?
Yes, that's true. And thank you for making that correction.
No,
I don't want to insist. And in fact, I think the Republicans are meeting this afternoon to decide what they want to do as far as whether they want to replace him as speaker. I mean, this is a Republican mess. They're going to have to solve it. And I think they're meeting this afternoon to try to decide what they want to do.
And there have been some Republicans calling for Householder's removal. Is it safe to assume your position on that issue?
Oh, I said that 6 days ago. I said that this he needs to resign. I mean, this is terrible. I mean, he's going to have to sort out whatever the legal issues are. I'm not going to prejudge a jury or a judge on those legal issues, but he cannot be an effective Speaker of the House while this is all going on. And so he has to resign, and we have to get on with the important business of the House. I mean, we have a pandemic. We have a COVID-19 pandemic that we have to deal with. We have budget issues that we have to deal with. We have people who are going to be potentially losing their homes or being evicted or having their utilities shut off. I mean, we have a lot of work to do in the legislature. We can't be sidetracked by this scandal.
We're talking with State Representative David Leland, a Democrat from Columbus, and we're going to dive into some of the specifics of House Bill 6 that you objected to even last year as it was being considered and then after it was adopted. But I'd like to talk a little bit more about the charges that Speaker Householder and others face. Now that you've had some time to digest the charges and the way that investigators have spelled out what they allege, what do you think about how this all went down? I mean, there's a suggestion that this was plotted over the course of a couple of years, at least, to lead to this specific piece of legislation.
Well, it's clear. I mean, I don't know. I'm an attorney by profession, so I learned a long time ago never to prejudge what a court will do. But, I mean, clearly from the allegations, this was an attempt by a corporate entity to pass legislation that was going to financially benefit themselves. And it was very involved, and it was long. It was a long process, and there were millions and millions of dollars and lots of campaign dark money, as they call it, being spent on behalf of people. And it's a terrible situation. I mean, this is not how we need to do business in the state of Ohio. I mean, if people can disagree on issues and you can disagree on policy, but we can't be doing it like this. We can't be doing it with this kind of corruption and this kind of dark money. I mean, if people are going to be spending money on candidates, voters, everybody needs to know who is spending that money on behalf of a candidate so that so that if the voters know that if FirstEnergy or somebody else is spending money on behalf of a particular candidate, then the voters can make that decision as to whether or not they want that particular candidate to win. But if it's dark and it's behind the scenes and it's hidden so that nobody really knows, it just shows up as these, you know, these funny little names like Generation Now and all these other names on the advertisements, people really don't know what's going on. They don't know the special agenda. And we've seen firsthand here how that can be devastating as far as good government is concerned.
Representative Leland, you called House Bill 6 after it passed last fall an environmental nightmare. You also said, quote, this is over $1 billion that's going to go to two nuclear power plants and a coal plant in Indiana. So there's a lot of money at stake here. Can you expand upon that and help us understand why you felt that way about it?
Well, you know, it's been called the worst environmental bill of the 21st century, not by me, but by many people who have, I mean, I agree with that, but that was called by many people who have taken a look at this bill because it does essentially what you just said. It charges the ratepayers of the state of Ohio over $1 billion to basically bail out two nuclear power plants and two coal plants, the oldest, dirtiest coal plants almost in the United States, one of them in Ohio, one of them in Indiana. And that's where this money is going from. Now, you could have a debate. I'd like to be on the side that I'm on, but you can have a debate as to whether we should be doing any of this. You know, I think it's a bad idea, and I think that we shouldn't be doing it. But the other part of House Bill 6, I don't think can be debatable. I mean, what the other part of House Bill 6, which is the part that I was very disturbed about, in addition to the bailout, is the destruction of Ohio's green energy economy, an economy that has produced over 100,000 jobs in the last few years, a green energy economy that will eliminate 10 billion, with a B, 10 billion tons of carbon from the atmosphere because of the green energy work that it does, and a green energy economy that has saved ratepayers $5.1 billion since 2009. And those figures are on file at the Public Utilities Commission that anybody can go take a look at if they want to. So all of that was eliminated in House Bill 6. And that's why this bill is the worst environmental bill of the 21st century, why I'm leading the charge. You know, as you mentioned before, I was leading the charge before, and I'm continuing to lead the charge to eliminate, to repeal House Bill 6 now more than ever, because as we've seen, the corrupt way that it was passed, but it was a bad idea even before we found out about the $60 million worth of dark money that went into passing it. It was a bad idea just from the beginning. Now, even doubly so, we need to repeal House Bill 6.
And we're talking with State Representative David Leland, a Democrat from Columbus. And I want to talk about the repeal process in just a moment, but just for my sake and our listeners' sake, you referenced the number of jobs created by the green economy and the threat that this legislation posed to it. Could you help us understand what you mean by the green economy and where we would find those jobs?
Well, jobs like people who are going around making sure that, you know, houses get refitted, or people that are working in the solar industry, or people who are working in the wind farms, or people who are refitting office buildings so that they're more environmentally safe. I mean, these kind of jobs are all over the state of Ohio, and the green energy economy was paying for those, and it was encouraging those kind of green energy jobs, and it accumulated to almost 100,000 of those type of jobs in the state of Ohio. All of those jobs were not only producing good working salaries for people, but they were also cleaning our economy. They were, I mean, cleaning our environment, making sure that we eliminated the 10 million tons of carbon that we were going to eliminate through the implementation of the green energy economy. So we were getting all kinds of benefits from it. We were getting jobs, we were reducing the carbon, and we were saving ratepayers money. And we sacrificed all of that to bail out two nuclear power plants and two coal plants.
And so now there is discussion that's much more serious about repealing what was then known as House Bill 6. Where does that stand now?
Well, we're just getting started. I mean, I think this is only a few weeks old, and I think this is actually good news. I mean, if any good news is going to come out of the scandal that we're seeing here in Columbus, the repeal of House Bill 6 is the good news that comes out of that. Now, I don't know what it's going to look like. I mean, there's lots of people who are talking about repealing. We have a Democratic bill that's been proposed to repeal House Bill 6, and there's a Republican bill to repeal House Bill 6. These were just filed yesterday, so I'm not exactly sure what they do. But the one thing that I want to make sure that we do is that, one, I want to make sure that we reinstate Ohio's green energy economy, that we go back to saving the billions of dollars for ratepayers, that we go back to the green energy jobs, that we go back to making sure that, you know, the green energy economy works here in the state of Ohio. And then number two, I want to make sure that the money doesn't go back to people who have spent a lot of money in the dark political world. I don't want them to be rewarded for that. So this can't go back to the exact same people that spent all that dark money. Now, how all that works and how we're going to do this, I don't know. But that's going to be my focus as we go forward.
I want to reference a column written by Cincinnati Enquirer writer Jason Williams. It was published this morning in the Enquirer's digital edition. I'm looking at a piece of it now. The headline says, Ohio Democrats share the blame for putting Republican Larry Householder back in power. And I'm going to just read a very small piece of it. Quote, as House Republicans are scheduled to meet on Tuesday to decide how to oust Householder from the state house, Democrats also should be doing some soul searching amid the biggest government corruption scandal in Ohio history. After all, it's the Democrats who are responsible for voting Householder in as Speaker. Representative David Leland of Columbus, you are a Democrat. What are your thoughts on that statement?
Well, I saw the headline on that. I almost laughed when I saw that. I mean, only this person could take a look at a completely Republican situation and say that, oh, it's the Democrats. Let's remind everybody that when we had a speaker vote almost 2 years ago, there were only two Republican candidates. Democrats didn't have a candidate. And everybody knows about Householder, but the other Republican candidates also had a dark money operation. And the other Republican candidate was part of the previous speaker, Rosenberger, who had to resign in disgrace. He was part of his legislative team. So we had two flawed Republican candidates, extremely flawed Republican candidates, and those were the only choices we had. We didn't have a Nancy Pelosi to pick from. We had two flawed Republican choices. Some Democrats went with one, some went with the other. But let's be clear, no Democrats were part of the dark money scheme, the scandal that was put together to help House Bill 6. No Democrats were part of the effort to create the scandal or the legislation, I mean, on House Bill 6. Some did vote for House Bill 6, but people like me led the effort against House Bill 6 on the floor of the House. And only people in the Republican Party or their allies have been indicted or at least charged in this particular thing. So to say that this has to do with Democrats is really reaching. This is a Republican scandal. It's the second Republican speaker that has been charged with some sort of corrupt activity, and this is something that we need to change. And the only way we change it is by electing more Democrats, because what happens is when you have one party in power, when you have Republicans that control the House, Republicans that control the Senate, Republicans that control everything, there are no checks and balances that occur in state government, and that's why you get these kind of scandals.
And Representative Leland, before we let you go, obviously we'll continue to follow the House Bill 6 situation as it plays out. We'll hope to talk to you again about that. But obviously, as you even referenced, we're still in the midst of this pandemic. You represent a district in Columbus. Bars and restaurants there are to close at 10 o'clock nightly. We saw Dr. Deborah Birx, the White House Coronavirus Response Coordinator, saying that Columbus could be the next COVID-19 hotspot. Your thoughts, and are we doing enough?
Well, I mean, you know, I think we're all on our own here, unfortunately. I mean, I have to commend the governor for his action, although I think we were a little late as far as the statewide mask order was concerned. I mean, obviously, we're not doing enough. We're not doing enough, mostly because we'd have no leadership from Washington, D.C. It's like everybody's on their own, and we're a big country, and so what happens is when one state gets their act together, then you see another flare-up in another state, and other things happen because everybody's traveling, everybody's going from place to place. We have no kind of coordinated effort from Washington, D.C., and everybody seems you know, to be on their own. So until we get some sort of coordinated effort from the national level, we're always going to see this stuff, you know, being popping up in one place and then popping up in another place, and no kind of coordinated effort. I mean, you have different efforts that are happening in Florida, different ones in Arizona, different ones in Texas. And you know, people travel all over this country, and they affect people all over the country. And, you know, it's just it's a whole look. You know, we're 5% of the population of the world, 4 or 5% of the population of the world. We have over 30% of all the COVID cases in the world, and we have over 25% of all the COVID fatalities, even though we're only 4 to 5% of the population. I mean, other and other countries won't let us even travel to their countries. We're doing so badly. I mean, it's almost like America has become a third world country because of the lack of leadership from Washington. So Columbus has got to do better. Everybody's got to do better, but we're all on our own. And the only way this is going to get solved is when we finally get some decent leadership out of Washington.
State Representative David Leland, a Democrat from Columbus, thank you so much for the time you gave us today.
Okay, thank you.
And you are listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We'll turn back now to House Bill 6 and the scandal that broke last week here in Ohio. And joining us on the phone is an assistant professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of California, Santa Barbara, Dr. Leah Stokes, who wrote an article for Vox about the situation here in Ohio and is also the author of the book Short-Circuiting Policy, which examines different policies impacted by utility companies. Dr. Stokes, thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.
It's absolutely our pleasure. And I was hoping that we could start with maybe a condensed but broad overview of what your book, Short-Circuiting Policy, explored and how it relates to what happened here in Ohio last week.
Yeah, so I started looking at what was going on in Ohio way back in 2013, and Ohio is a really key part of my book, actually. I was interested in the way that electric utilities across this country have been slowing down the clean energy transition. They've been doing things like denying that climate change is real, trying to pass laws that roll back renewable energy requirements, and that's exactly what happened in Ohio. And so I ended up following the case. I interviewed many representatives and senators and all kinds of people in Ohio, and was sort of keyed in to what was happening with House Bill 6, and I wrote about that in my book. And many of us knew that it was something corrupt going on in Ohio. This was kind of an open secret in many ways, but when the FBI arrested a householder last week, wow, the story really broke to a whole new level.
And we're going to get into that a little bit more. But the book, of course, examines utilities and the role they play in promoting climate denial and rolling back clean energy laws. And we just heard from a state representative out of Columbus who said that this bill absolutely rolled back clean energy laws in addition to bailing out a power company here in the state. How did this come to be based on the research that you've done? How did these utilities start to play this role against science?
Well, electric utilities started to attack clean energy laws around 2010. They were working with an organization called the American Legislative Exchange Council. This is an organization of companies and right-wing legislators from across the country, including many representatives in Ohio, such as Representative Bill Seitz. And they wrote this model bill that said, let's get rid of clean energy standards. So for a long time, from the 1990s onwards, many states across the country, including Ohio, in a bipartisan way, passed clean energy standards, which basically said, let's clean up our energy system. Here's the way we're going to do it. It'll be in a planned and easy way. And, you know, that was the plan in Ohio initially when the renewable energy standard and energy efficiency standards were both put into place. And that was working very well. In fact, the energy efficiency standard that HB 6 repealed had saved Ohioans $5 billion. It was an extremely effective policy. But it wasn't effective for electric utilities' bottom line. And so and AEP are both companies that operate in Ohio that have coal plants and nuclear plants that are not doing very well financially, particularly these coal plants called the OVEC plants as well as the Samus plant. And rather than shut them down, what these utilities did was they sought a bailout so that they could keep those coal plants open, keep putting dirty air into the air for all Ohioans to breathe, and not turn towards clean energy, which is less expensive and, you know, of course, cleaner for people's air.
And we are talking with Dr. Leah Stokes, an assistant professor in the Department of Political Science, also affiliated with the Bren School of Environmental Science and Management and the Environmental Studies Department at the University of California, Santa Barbara. Sounds like you're quite busy there on the West Coast, but you did take some time to write an article about Ohio for Vox. And the headline suggests, of course, that what this legislation was an abysmal energy law fueled by corruption. Those are the words used in the headline. And I'm going to read a piece of what you wrote and to spell it out for our listeners from your perspective. Quote, by July 2019, the legislative session was over and First Energy had not secured its bailout. Householder kept working, calling his colleagues back to the chamber with little notice. With narrow margins, he delivered the votes. And that same day, Governor Mike DeWine signed the First Energy bailout into law. At the time, you wrote, many wondered, why the urgency, Mr. Speaker? Did you really have to call all the legislators back from their vacations to pass this coal bailout? It appears the FBI was wondering the same thing. And Dr. Stokes, you go on to write that, quote, it now seems clear that Householder was working directly with First Energy and its affiliated companies. The utility funneled $61 million through an organization called Generation Now, which Householder, his political affiliates, and First Energy lobbyists controls based on its tax status. It was supposed to be a social welfare organization acting in the public interest. So when you look back and reflect on people asking why the urgency, Mr. Speaker, what are your thoughts now that you seem to have more clues about why?
Well, we knew that Larry Householder was in the pocket for First Energy and also for AEP to a certain extent. Since I wrote that story, there has been breaking news out of the Dispatch that AEP, American Electric Power, is also involved. Part of that $61 million, probably $350,000, is from AEP. And there's also suggestion that there's another $13 million that AEP funneled towards this dark money effort. So, you know, these utilities were interested in getting a bailout so that they could keep the OVEC plants open. You have to understand that these are terrible, very old plants. By their current retirement date, they'll be 80-plus years old by the time they're retired. They're very dirty. They're not economically competitive. And so when they're trying to compete with other cleaner, newer sources, they just fail. And so rather than shut them down and take the loss for their bad decisions to keep those coal plants open and to retrofit them, what these utilities decided to do was to stick every Ohioan with a bill that they would pay to keep those coal plants open. And Larry Householder really became the conduit for that. I will say, too, though, that there are questions about Governor DeWine's involvement as well. The Plain Dealer just broke a story yesterday that the governor's office is full of people who have ties with First Energy. And indeed, in that part of the story that you read, when Householder was trying to get the votes for HB 6, a staff member from Governor DeWine's office actually tried to get a taxpayer-funded airplane to go pick up the legislators to bring them back to do this last-minute vote. And, of course, the governor signed this terrible corrupt bill on the exact day that it was passed. So this was a priority for him, too. And that isn't surprising because First Energy and AEP have been giving so much money to Republican politicians in Ohio. If you look at Larry Obhoff, the Senate president, he takes a lot of money from First Energy and AEP. The former Senate president, Keith Faber, who is now the state auditor, he was very key to wiping out the wind energy industry back in 2014, and he takes tons of money from these utilities. Bill Seitz, who has been championing rolling back the renewable energy law, you know, that representative has taken tons of money from First Energy and AEP and has been really key to getting these rollbacks in place. And I'll say that he didn't even call for Larry Householder to be removed as speaker after the FBI arrested him. Bill Seitz did not call for that, Representative Seitz. And Representative Seitz is saying that we should keep this corrupt House Bill 6 that was passed through this totally insane dark money scheme that literally has the FBI involved. So I think we have to ask some very hard questions about who is representing people in Ohio, and are they working for everyday ratepayers and everyday citizens in Ohio, or are they working for utility companies?
And I want to say that we reached out to First Energy Corp to invite the CEO, Charles Jones, on our program today. He was unable to participate, but First Energy released to us a transcript of an earnings call from Friday, which CEO Charles Jones comments about the Department of Justice investigation. Part of what he said is, quote, First Energy Corp, our First Energy Services company, subsidiary, and our political action committee were served subpoenas related to this matter. We are having discussions with the Department of Justice lawyers and will fully comply with the subpoenas. He goes on to say, I believe that First Energy acted properly in this matter, and we intend to cooperate fully with the investigation to, among other things, ensure our company and our role in supporting House Bill 6 is understood as accurately as possible. Charles Jones went on to say, quote, we have supported keeping Ohio's two nuclear plants in operation. We believe in supporting the thousands of families, former First Energy families, who rely on the jobs those plants provide. We supported legislative solutions for the nuclear plants even after we stopped operating them. We were strong supporters of House Bill 6 and opposed the referendum effort to repeal it. Charles Jones goes on to say, at no time does our support for nuclear plants in Ohio interfere or supersede our ethical obligations to conduct our business properly. The facts will become clear as the investigation progresses, and we support bringing the facts forward. We have a more complete statement from First Energy CEO Charles Jones on our website, wvxu.org. You can read that in full. And we are joined by Dr. Leah Stokes, an assistant professor in the Department of Political Science at the University of California, Santa Barbara. Dr. Stokes, any reaction to that comment?
I mean, here's the reality. Part of the nuclear bailout is likely being used by First Energy Solutions, now Energy Harbor, this subsidiary that was spun off when First Energy went through bankruptcy. Part of the money for the nuclear bailout that he's talking about is likely being used to bail out the Samus coal plant, which is a dirty old coal plant that was scheduled to shut down. And just days after House Bill 6 passed, a representative from First Energy Solutions said, we don't need to shut down that coal plant anymore. The fact is that the way House Bill 6 was designed, First Energy Solutions never has to open up its books to legislators or regulators to say, here's how we're using this money that you gave us to keep the nuclear plants open, which means that there's no oversight. We don't actually know how they're using this money. And the CEO of First Energy Solutions, now Energy Harbor, John Judge, has previously said that if HB 6 would pass, then they would be able to invest $40 to $50 million in the Samus coal plant. So clearly there's some funny accounting going on over at Energy Harbor, formerly First Energy Solutions, where they're using part of this nuclear bailout to bail out a coal plant. And that doesn't even bring us to the other part of HB 6, which is a direct coal bailout of the OVEC plants that both AEP and First Energy are owners of. That bailout, it's very hard to estimate how much it is, but it's something like $1 billion to $2 billion that's going to keep those OVEC plants operating until 2040. That's a direct subsidy that the Ohio ratepayers are paying for. And by the way, they're doing that because the way House Bill 6 worked was they gutted the renewable energy and energy efficiency policies that were actually saving Ohioans money, that were cleaning up the air, making it easier for people to breathe, making it less likely that people die from COVID-19. It's a very good idea to do that. And instead, they took that ratepayer money and they put it towards this coal subsidy to keep these dirty plants open that literally make people's lungs less healthy and make them more likely to die from COVID-19. So there are big
Dr. Stokes, I've only got about a minute left, and I just want to make sure that we discuss a little bit, as fascinating as all of this is. We talked with Representative Leland just moments ago about the political fallout and what happens to the Larry Householder politically. Mm-hmm. And I want to note that in your book, Short-Circuiting Policy, you do examine a similar criminal investigation that took place in Arizona, but then you offer a counter example of what happened in Virginia and the relationship between politicians and electric utilities. Can you give us an idea of what happened there and whether some Ohioans who hope to capitalize politically off this could learn from that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So similar scandal has played out in Arizona where a chairman of the Public Utility Commission was under FBI investigation for its ties with Arizona Public Service, a utility there. So we've seen the way that money can corrupt our political system if electric utilities do these sorts of things. And in Virginia, what happened was a bunch of politicians said, we are not going to take utility money anymore. They did a pledge to not take money from the electric utility named Dominion. Politicians in Ohio can do the exact same thing. They can say, we are not going to take money from FirstEnergy or AEP anymore. These are corrupt companies who are not acting in the public interest. And the benefit of that is that after those politicians stop taking money from those companies, they actually pass the clean energy law, which is making the air cleaner for all the people in Virginia to breathe. It's a really great policy, and Ohio could be doing the exact same thing.
If you want to read Dr. Stokes's article and you can't find it online, on your own, go to WVXU.org, click on the Cincinnati Edition tab. We've got a link to it there. Professor Leah Stokes from the University of California at Santa Barbara, thank you so much for the time you gave us today. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer of today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.